Good morning, 739 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Joining us now, as he does every Wednesday at this time, Mayor of Pensacola, D.C. Reeves, who is out of town, Mr. Mayor. Tell him where you're at, sir.
Yeah, I'm looking at Harvard Yard right now, but I'm not going to say it in that accent that everybody says Harvard Yard. But,
you're not going to do Harvard Yard? Come on.
You still need a napkin?
Yeah, so I'm in Harvard finishing up the fellowship at the Harvard Graduate School of Design. And so I present on Thursday, talking about our Hells T. Williams project that we've been talking about for about 20 years and seeing if we can try to figure out a way to get it done. So looking forward to that. And, yep, so I've made it up here and dusted my jackets back off, and I'm back in the Northeast.
Outstanding. Dusted your jackets back off. That's so funny. I know. Whenever we travel to the North, I always have to think to myself, now, what do I need to pack again? How is this going to be different? Because I've forgotten all those
right,
things.
Right, I didn't do a perfect job of that, for sure. I did not do a perfect job.
Lots of things that are going to be on the agenda next week for the city council meeting that you and I have been talking about for some time. We'll get to that in just a second. Before, I just want to make sure I don't forget to do this. Charlie Pepler is no longer the – is he effectively now no longer the city attorney? And who is the acting city attorney right now?
Yeah, no, he is through the end of this month.
Okay.
And the procedure moving forward is we will hire an interim city attorney. And then at that point, we'll go ahead. And really, we wanted to put the city in a position where they're not having to rush or scramble for a new permanent city attorney.
Got it.
I thought it would be more prudent for us to hire someone interim, you know, a firm or locally, and then that'll give us the runway we need. But, you know, as I said, I've got a lot of respect for Charlie. You know, he's been in this business a long, long time. But with any administration, you know, you go in different directions and have different priorities on things. But it doesn't say anything, negative about the person. We're changing priorities, and we're going to move forward with that. So I'm looking forward to the future. Not only in city attorney's office, but of course, you know, in several departments across the city.
Yeah, so I just want to press a little bit more and kind of ask the question, what is the reason? Because, you know, I understand sometimes when city attorneys aren't doing their job, I understand that, but I am curious if there is a public reason that you're giving for making this decision, because it was an ask for resignation, right? It wasn't a resignation, it wasn't a firing, it was sort of that somewhere in between mode, right?
Right, exactly, and again, I mean, I think what indicates that is how amicable this has been and the respect I have for Charlie is obviously, you know, he has been, that's been announced for a while now. He still remains our, you know, acting city attorney. This is not an issue of thinking that, you know, he can't, you know, represent us for another day or another week. But, you know, I'll keep a lot of the details between us as we have in the release. But at the end of the day, I really mean what I say when, you know, when you start this as mayor and you have 850 employees in several departments, you assess a lot of different things and, you know, you decide to stay in this direction, go in a different direction. And that's not just in the city attorney's office. That's in a lot of departments. So, as I said, I'll kind of keep the details, kind of between us. But it's, as I said, it's nothing immoral or unethical or anything like that. And as I said, I've got a lot of respect for Charlie. It's just, you know, a difference of opinion and a difference of priority. And that's why we made that change and why we're moving forward.
One last question just on this subject, because it was raised to me and I hadn't been thinking about it. He's going to get severance pay, which I know the amount of severance for an employee of his duration is relatively set. But the thing is, if somebody is, either fired for cause or, you know, released from their contract, whatever terminology you want to use, I understand severance in that case, but his letter says he resigned, and typically when you resign, you don't get severance. So can you maybe just clarify that for me?
With resignation, it's the opposite. If you get fired, if you were fired from the job, you don't necessarily get severance. Remember, I'm new to the policy. That's the technical aspects of this to make sure we're accurate. You probably wouldn't need to talk to Ted Kircher, but ultimately, a firing would not cause any, you know, do you have any severance or and so it, that's what's happened in this case is this is a resignation. So this is not a firing. This is a resignation.
So okay. So you may want to check in just because my sense is it's the opposite, that it's, you know, when somebody is sort of pushed out, that's when they get severance. When somebody leaves, they don't get it. But, you know, I'll let you go talk to the HR people and make sure that's – it was a question that was raised for me, and I hadn't thought about it till I read the letter. I'm like, oh, well, that is an interesting question.
Well, and it might be – the point might be around the word we're using here, too, in terms of whether it's – yeah. So, anyway, yes, happy to clarify that for you.
Cool. The thing is, next week we've got all kinds of stuff that is on the agenda. Let's get into some of that. To my mind, and it might seem like a silly thing to a lot of people, but I know for a lot of people, this is a huge news note. You finally have a proposal in front of city council for a warning system for Graffiti Bridge.
Yeah, I know. We're going to try to, you know, as I said in the press conference, if you're going to run through a structural item and then hit the bridge, God help you. I don't know what else we can do for you. But, you know, we are going to move forward with an actual structural element on both sides of the bridge, which, you know, people ask me, and I think they're waiting with bated breath for this technical term. And I say, well, it's this arm with chimes on it. You know, I mean, that's ultimately what it is. I don't know what the technical term is, but it would be a structural warning, something that would hit the top of your truck before you would ever get to the bridge. So the first step, as you saw on the agenda, is to get the funding source. So we had to, you know, kind of reallocate, and we've got to get that, because we're doing that, we've got to get that approval from city council. So that's what you see on the agenda. That doesn't mean it'll be up to the next day. It just means that will now, you know, with our partners, FDOT, that, of course, you know, the city road is on the north side, FDOT on the south side. We'll start that process. But obviously, we've started this process already in terms of getting pricing, trying to find something that we know will be permitted, all that kind of stuff. That's all done. It's just a matter of now we got the money, go spend it and get the thing constructed and put up.
And if you look at it, the picture that's in the agenda is basically a iron bar vertical and an iron crossbar held up with a chain, and then dangling chimes basically below that, set to the height that if you hit these chimes, you're going to hit that bridge. And I know there's going to be a little bit of work just making sure that we get the right height for the chimes, because part of the problem is not merely the clearance of the bridge, but the fact that when a long truck is underneath the bridge, that the point of the tires on either side is higher than the point at the bottom dip point. So there's all those kind of logistical factors, but it's basically a physical hit this, hit that kind of thing. And it's up on our Facebook page if people want to see it. But I'm weirdly irrationally excited about ending the tragic encounters at Graffiti Bridge once and for all. So you can finally be the mayor to put that stuff to rest.
We're going to give it our best shot. I mean, we think this is the best shot to date of at least, as I said, I can't promise you someone isn't going to bust right through the chimes and hit the bridge, but I think we're in much, much better position with this in place than we were before.
Agreed. Hang on for just a second. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. Let's go to Candy with traffic on the fives.
There is an accident, 57th Avenue and Lillian, right near the church and the graveyard there, but it has been moved off to the side so you can get around. But if you have traffic tips, text 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Bridge is fine.
Somebody called it, D.C. Somebody calls it on my texting line. A trailer tickler.
There you go.
It's a trailer tickler. I love
that. Technical is a term as I've heard.
Yeah, I love it. Put in the tickler. Okay, so that's what we're going to go with. The other thing that you and I have talked off and on about is this business with Casks and Flights and allowing them to operate and some of the changing circumstances surrounding COVID and, you know, liquor consumed on the premises with restaurants. How large is the size? How many on which side of the street and all of that? You're proposing some changes there too, right?
Exactly. So in short, there's a lot of nuance to this, but in short, what we're saying is right now the city of Pensacola's ordinance that defines a restaurant and it being on a block with a bar is the same definition that the state uses for its SFS liquor license, which is 151 seat minimum, 51% food. So makes sense. You know, we've been using that same definition for years and years now as how we define restaurants. But the truth in practice is, you know, expect a restaurant to have 151 seats. It just goes back to small business owners and entrepreneurs. I mean, that's a difficult lift. So what we're looking at, instead of saying, well, the ordinance says one bar per block, now we're going to do two. You know, there's some fallacy with that ordinance as it is. So I didn't want to Band-Aid, you know, an old ordinance. And plus, we're not doing this for just Casks and Flights. We're not doing that. This is something that is the policy of the city, right? So we have to take a holistic view and make sure that it's something that works for everybody and is a positive benefit to everybody. And so that's what we're going to do, is we're ultimately going to be able to lower the number of seats that you would have to be defined as a restaurant. Now, how you decide to sell liquor at that point, whether you purchase hundreds of thousands of dollars for COP or any other form or just be beer and wine, that's up to you. That's between you and Tallahassee. But what we're saying is we're not going to be impede someone's ability to be defined as a restaurant if they have a restaurant permit, you know, which means they had an on-site inspection and those things you read about in the newspaper about passing and failing inspections, you know, that's going to be required of anybody that would have that license. And that number is going to go down. Right now we're proposing 25 seats. So that's what we're looking at. I think that is brings us, you know, a change that's good and probably keeps us up with the times of what the real business model of a restaurant is and being able to make sure that they're successful.
And part of this ordinance would be to repeal the authority to have bottle clubs, which has kind of been this on again, off again problem we've been dealing with. Not a practical reality right now, but certainly something that we understand why you'd want to prohibit that going forward. I appreciate that. We always run out of time with you, but I don't want to go without mentioning this. There's also going to be a deal talked about with the Port Warehouse where we're going to do the pickleball deal. That deal is on the agenda. And tucked all the way down at the very bottom of the agenda, repealing the prohibition of skateboarding on sidewalks in the city of Pensacola in conjunction with yesterday's announcement of the May 2nd grand opening for the Blake Doyle Skate Park. I have to assume that part of this repeal is based on the recent horrible death of a young skateboarder on the street. Am I reading too much into this, or is that part of the motivation here?
You know, perhaps this is something Councilman Jones brought to me and we're co-sponsoring. Really, another example of like the restaurant ordinance, another example of trying to get us, you know, with the times, so to speak, on having some old ordinances that just really haven't been looked at in a while. And, you know, the prohibition on skateboarding in cities is going away fairly quickly. I think we're probably an outlier that we even have that at this point. Understand why it was put in, but you know, that, so it's really been more of the conversation around the investment we're making. We don't need it to run the skate park, for example.
Right.
But it was just, you know, something to say, hey, you know, and Councilman Jones rightfully, you know, said, hey, look, you know, I'm looking at this thing. No city really is doing this anymore. This might be a good time to clean this up. So really in the same vein that the restaurant situation, the restaurant ordinance.
Well, on behalf of the skateboarders, say, you know, I thank you. I appreciate that. We always like to end with a bit of a lightning round for Mayor Reeves. The first question for you, serious question of sorts. Do you use your horn when you're driving? If so, when?
Yes, I do. Guilty as charged. And probably most often when someone's on their phone waiting at the light that's been green for 10 seconds.
But the gentle, not so gentle. Giddy up, son. Giddy up.
Yeah. How quickly I do it has lengthened now that I'm mayor. I can't be honking at people. You know,
is there a food that you loved as a kid that you still love as an adult, but you feel embarrassed to eat because it's kind of a kid oriented food?
Ooh. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is chicken nuggets, but I'm not embarrassed to eat them. I just had them at the airport on the way up here. So,
nice.
Maybe I should be. Maybe I should.
That's fantastic. Last question. What's the most useful class you took in college? Like one that really has been of benefit to you?
Definitely communication classes. I mean, it was my major, but, you know, comm studies courses, there's a couple of them. But not only could they make me write a 30-page paper, now I guess kids shouldn't have a computer do that for them. But also just, you know, communication is important, whether you're a journalist, whether you're an entrepreneur, or whether you're the mayor, you know. And so those are things that have proved valuable for me. So
absolutely.
I tell people, if you don't know what you want to do in college, communication is a real good opportunity because you know you're going
to
need it.
Learn how to type and learn how to speak. Those are some pretty crucial skills. Mayor D.C. Reeves, always a pleasure, sir. Have a good time at Harvard and with the presentation tomorrow on the Hollis T. Williams. We'll look forward to talking to you next week and then at the city council meeting next Thursday. Sir, thanks as always for the time.
Of course. All right. Thanks, Andrew.
You bet.